Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And it is my honor and privilege to be sitting in for Michael Savage. It is Peter Weisbach, and thank you for joining us. I'm on a kind of vacation. I decided to take some days off to repair my deck. I know, it's always insane. I don't know why I do these things. I mean, I'm injury prone. I do the handyman thing, but I don't really particularly like it until it's actually done. So when the call came that I could sit in for Savage, I thought, well, of course, anything to put off this little task that I took upon myself. What I want to talk about? I want to talk about this censure that's being proposed by a supervisor of San Francisco against Michael Savage, of all people. Apparently, this has to do, again, it's immigration, and apparently the San Francisco supervisors are considering drafting legislation that would create a plan to provide city subsidies to immigrants applying for citizenship, green cards, and petitions for relatives and workers. So the green card thing I find particularly interesting because you can't really apply for it when you're in the country, right? You have to be out of the country. So they're going to send this money down to Mexico. I mean, yeah, these morons, these bloodsuckers that parade as our politicians these days are just amazing. They can't cut it in the private sector. They're like leeches sucking us dry of our life energy, i.e. money that we work for. And they can be so creative in spending other people's monies in every which way, shape, and form. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so that is the idea of Supervisor Chris Daley. And then Supervisor Gerardo Sandoval has introduced a resolution condemning the defamatory language used by radio personality Michael Savage against immigrants. Sandoval's resolution comes after Savage's July 5th broadcast, during which he made a number of comments involving a group of students who were fasting to advocate for immigration policy changes. Savage said, and I quote here from this piece of paper, "I would say, let them fast until they starve to death. Then that solves the problem." The resolution calls the comments symbolic of hatred and racism. I really, for the life of me, cannot understand why there is not more media outrage to what Michael Savage said. Sandoval said that the intolerant and racist comments of Michael Savage demand a strong condemnation. Well, it's quite obvious they don't have much to say down there, much to do down there in San Francisco if they can kind of get involved with talk radio, but I would think that Savage would look at that as kind of a great recognition, don't you think? I mean, he would wear that proudly. I mean, I know I would. Now, do we have the comments that Michael made that this guy, Sandoval, is actually referring to? We do?
Then there's the story of college students who are fasting out here in the Bay Area. They're illegal aliens, and they want green cards simply because they're students. I don't understand how this two and two adds up. Well, I would say let them fast till they starve to death, then it solves the problem. Because then we won't have a problem about giving them green cards, because they're illegal aliens, they don't belong here to begin with. They broke into the country. They're criminals. Why do I owe them a green card? Because they're going to my colleges for free? This makes no sense at all. Listen to clip 11.
Nalali and four other students want Congress to pass an immigration reform bill that includes the DREAM Act, a clause that would give undocumented college graduates the opportunity to become legal. They are fasting for 4 days to show solidarity.
We have engineers who are still waiters. And they're just waiting for the DREAM Act to be enacted so they can become engineers.
We have pre-med students. We don't need you as engineers. Go back where you came from. Go back to where you came from and be an engineer. That's all. Go give your talents to your home country. Go be an engineer there. You stole the education from us. Now give it back to your home country. Go make a bomb where you came from.
Well, I think he should be applauded. I think he should get signed to some kind of merit award or the key to San Francisco from Mayor Newsom for what he said, because it's absolutely right. Ditto, 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 ditto again. I mean, how can you argue with that? I mean, these people that have so bastardized the English language, these slimy leeches that we call politicians, and I include most of them. There are very few that don't fall under that category, whether they're Republican or Democrat. But this Sandoval, for instance, I mean, talk about, and this Supervisor Chris Daley, talk about blurring the distinction between legal immigrant, of whom I have never heard Savage say anything derogatory, and illegal immigrants. You see, these characters got to constantly kind of blur the language. And if you are against somebody who crashes your borders, somebody who comes here illegally, somebody who actually ends up pulling money out of your pocket, because we've seen that these uneducated, low-skilled immigrants are a drag on the social welfare system in this country, that there's a negative impact. In other words, we have to pay to support them. Yeah, that's something, isn't it? I mean, you know, dig it into your pocket to help pay for the maid that works for some billionaire or millionaire in the country, because they're illegal. And these people continually end up consciously, at least I hope so. If not, they are morons. And of course, that's another story. Maybe they are morons. But consciously, they blur that distinction. And somehow, if you're against somebody who has broken the law to come in here, you got to be a xenophobe. You got to be a racist. You got to be a bigot. Now, I want to tie this in with another story, and of course, I think that Savage is absolutely right, and I hope this Sandoval, these characters, I mean, does this say something about the city of San Francisco? That these supervisors have this kind of time on their hand? These guys couldn't make it in private industry. They would lose their job. Nobody would want them, and if they started their own business, they would be out of business in a matter of months, because they couldn't focus on the job at hand, and their job certainly isn't to be involved in federal immigration policy. They're supervisors of San Francisco. This other story is Charles Murray, Dr. Charles Murray. You probably, if I say the bell curve, you would remember his name. And this story comes out of Australia. Controversial American political scientist Charles Murray is urging Australians to ditch egalitarianism as a central tenet of the national culture and recognize that the country's future is in the hands of the best and the brightest. Dr. Murray will tell a forum in Sydney next week that the smartest young Australians are being shortchanged by an education system that puts a child's emotional well-being ahead of learning. We're taking these bright kids and coddling the little darlings, Dr. Murray told the Australian. We placate them because we're a society which says nobody can be stupid, even if they are. Now, isn't that a straight, honest statement? I mean, how could anybody argue with that other than reacting emotionally and calling him an elitist, calling him names, emotionally reacting to it? Because we are not all equal. If we're all equal, I mean, even if I took steroids like Barry Bonds, I still wouldn't hit that number of home runs that he's hit. So how can we sit here and kind of delude ourselves to think that everybody is equal? Everybody may have an equal opportunity to try to do something, but they certainly aren't guaranteed by anybody anywhere, not even God himself, that there's going to be an equal outcome, because we're not all equipped with the same gray matter. I mean, I ain't as bright as Bill Gates. I mean, that's just a fact. Doesn't matter what anybody says. Anyway, so the story goes on to say that Dr. Murray is best known for his book, The Bell Curve, co-authored with Richard Herrnstein, which caused a storm by linking race and IQ. Australians talk about this tall poppy syndrome without understanding where it comes from, Murray said. It's based on the idea that we're all equal. Well, I've got news for you. We're not all equal, and the sooner we accept that, the better. There's nothing wrong with being elitist, and we need to come to terms with that and embrace it. Dr. Murray's critics say the core of his argument is the flawed notion that intelligence is hereditary, that we are born with intelligence just as we inherit hair or skin color. In the nature versus nurture debate, there are a number of social scientists who have shown that intelligence can be improved by as much as 20 IQ points, according to one French study. Now, you see, again, this is the way it is set up. I mean, this is so misleading in this article. Dr. Murray's critics say that the core of his argument is the flawed notion that intelligence is hereditary, that we're born with intelligence just as we inherit hair and skin color. And, of course, that's true. And can we do something about it? Yes, we can marginally increase our IQ due to nurture. But 20 IQ points, let me put this in perspective for you. You know, if you're an idiot and you increase your IQ by 20, you become an imbecile. If you're an imbecile and you increase your IQ by 20, you become a moron. If you're a moron and increase your IQ by 20 points, well, you're borderline deficiency. So, I mean, this is just, again, it's such a stacked way of these people trying to control. That's politically correct language that was used in this article again. And what is wrong? Why are we not applauding elitism? I mean, think about this. As a society, we applaud elitism in sports. I mean, that's our superstars like Tiger Woods in golf. In acting, Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, De Niro. Technology, Bill Gates, Stephen Jobs. Why don't we embrace elitism as a society for the society itself? Because I do think that we have a superior model to, say, China, to even the British parliamentary system, to the Russian model. So why are we so intent on bringing everything down to the lowest common denominator? And then for people that speak the unvarnished truth, like Savage, you've got these morons who are elected into public office, like this guy, Sandoval, calling to censure Savage. This is just so bizarre. It's like 1984 has arrived. I gave my girls, my two young girls, a copy of 1984, George Orwell's, and said, read it. And so I've had an opportunity to get back and read parts of it. And it's just like it's happening now. Love is war. War is love. Or peace is war. All right, I'm going to open the phone lines and say, I'm asking this question. I mean, what is wrong with being an elitist society, saying our society is elite? It is the best available. There is no model yet that has surpassed it. What is wrong with that? My number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. This is Weisbach, in for Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Savage. It's 24 after the hour. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. If you've just joined us, we're discussing the fact that there is a San Francisco supervisor by the name of, what's his name here, Sandoval, who is wanting to censure Michael Savage for something that Savage said on July the 5th. And it had to do with a bunch of students that were protesting, group students. They were protesting, and their protest was by means of a fast to advocate for immigration policy changes. And Savage said, I would say, let them fast until they starve to death. Then that solves the problem. Now, the resolution calls for the comments, that the comments are symbolic of hatred and racism. I really, for the life of me, cannot understand why there is not more media outrage to what Michael Savage said, Sandoval said. The intolerant and racist comments of Michael Savage demand a strong condemnation, which, of course, is absolutely nonsense. By the way, Sandoval has made some comments that were construed to be anti-Semitic, and he ended up apologizing for those remarks to the Jewish community. But that's an aside. But this is always the ammunition, isn't it? When La Raza calls you an immigrant, they call us racist and intolerant. It is not racist and intolerant to say that those who break our laws should be removed. It is not racist and intolerant to say if those people that wish to fast and thereby die should be allowed to do so because it is an act of free will. The very same people that are condemning this, I mean, I'm absolutely certain would be pro-choice, right? Wouldn't they say that people who are pro-choice have the right to abort their baby? Yet, they'll argue that, hey, the comments made by Michael Savage in this case are just racist. which, of course, is a bunch of rubbish and garbage. Let's get to the phone lines. Tom, listening to us on KSTE Sacramento. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, partner. Mr. Sandoval is setting the San Francisco supervisors up for at least a $50 million slander lawsuit, and I'll tell you why. He misquoted Michael. I listened carefully. First, you said what Sandoval said. Then I listened carefully to Savage's recording that you played. He nowhere indicated the race. And frankly, when I heard what Savage was saying, I assumed he was talking about Norwegians, didn't you?
I see. Good point. Thank you for your call. Moving right along. Scott, WOR, New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I have an answer to your question about elitism. The political correctness doesn't mind all elitism. It loves La Raza, Black Power, Gay Pride. It only, the politically correct media only hates elitism if it's by Caucasians.
Well, no, I don't think that that's the case at all, because they, as you may have read today, depending on which story you read, that whites are now the minority in, I think, a third of the counties, major counties in the country. No, I mean, they certainly have an animus towards America itself and its history. And why, I don't understand it, because this is probably the only country in the world in which they can get away with that nonsense. But they figure that once you attack on that basis and constantly call people to be racist, that they will shut up and change their tune and go, you know, lockstep with what their idea of society is, which is a total remake of society. I mean, it's a fantasy land. It's just like constantly when you see how we have changed our standards in order to accommodate. When Charles Murray says, look, there's nothing wrong with elitism, and that, hey, wake up, some people are smarter than other people, not everybody is equal, of course. And as I pointed out earlier in this article, that when some people say that Dr. Murray's premise is flawed because the notion that intelligence is hereditary, of course it's hereditary. By and large, can you modify it somewhat? Yes, of course you can, in terms of nurture. And it even goes on to say that. You can, you know, as much as 20 IQ points you can increase through nurture. Well, 20 IQ points is nothing. Nothing. It takes you from being an idiot to an imbecile, or an imbecile to a moron. Call me at 1-800-449-8255. It is Wiseback in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. By the way, the censure that's being attempted by the San Francisco supervisor by the name of Sandoval with respect to Michael Savage's comments, Michael does have a response to that, a commentary, an editorial on his website. It's michaelsavage.com. I would encourage you to go there, michaelsavage.com. And then the other aspect, what's wrong with saying that our society is one of an elite society, which I firmly believe it is. Let's go to Tom. Tom in Chicago, WIND. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, challenge you on your point that we're an elite system or an elite society. I mean, we're getting our tails handed to us on a number of different fronts, you know, economic fronts or political fronts. And America is an experiment, and our brand of democracy is relatively new. And I don't know that you can reach that conclusion yet.
Oh, really? So how are we economically being whooped?
Well, I mean, China has a hybrid system of free market economy / communism that seems to be doing a pretty good job of.
So do you think that they're beating us?
I don't think they're beating us.
Well, you just said that we were, you know, we're not an elitist society, that we are being whooped economically, and is China the one that's doing it?
China's one of them, yeah.
Yeah. So how are they doing it?
Well, they're doing it by, you know, by squeezing their labor force and not paying anybody.
Uh-huh. But, you know, let me put it to you this way: you do know, of course, that we have the largest economy in the world.
I do know that.
And that in real dollars, that certainly the people say in the next 5 to 10 years, China will surpass us in terms of a total GDP. But, of course, on a per capita basis, it's still a mere fraction of what we produce on a per capita basis. You do understand that. So I don't see how you can say that we're being whooped.
I don't see how you can say that we're not.
Well, because our per capita income is like 15 times that of China.
But you're talking about an individual data point. I'm talking about a group data point. I'm talking about from a
hold on a second. Stop this gibberish. If I've got 15 times more than you have, would you say I'm better off?
It's not gibberish. It just because
if I have 15 times more stuff than you do, am I better off?
Sure, from an economic.
Good, thank you. Thank you. That's exactly what we're talking about. So therefore, you made a false statement coming on this program. I've exposed you for your moronic beliefs. Do you just hate the country, sir?
Not really. I hate the hijacking of the country by right-wing extremists.
Now, how has it been hijacked, sir?
Well, I mean, you offer these outlandish one-off sort of situations where, you know, like a prisoner looks for a sex change and gets a grant.
No, I haven't done that at all. But even if that were the case, and if there was only one such case, would that not be a misuse of somebody else's life energy? So what is the purpose of government, sir, in our system?
That's a good question.
What is the purpose of our federal government?
I'm sorry, what?
What is the purpose of our federal government?
I'm not really sure, to be quite honest.
Because you're an ignoramus. You don't know your history. Have you read the Constitution?
Dickhead name caller, aren't you?
Well, have you read the Constitution? I'm merely giving a label to your performance so people understand. It's shorthand for your performance. Have you read the Constitution, sir? Now, you see, now this man, I could probably help. I could probably help this guy and get that 20, give him that 20 IQ points up if he spent some time with me. But he'd still only go from being an idiot up to an imbecile. Next up, Al, KNEW, San Francisco. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Dr. Murray is not quite accurate. If I take a 9-year-old child out of Detroit or Bangladesh, I can nurture that child to a higher percentage point on the scale of intelligence than 20%. And the fact of the matter is, during the 60s,
you guys don't listen. You know, I just don't have time for people who don't listen. That's not at all what was said. Murray has made the point that intelligence is largely hereditary. He's attacked by critics that say, wait a minute, you know, nurture works. Well, the studies say that maybe through nurture, you can increase IQ by about 20 points.
Dr. Murray,
it said nothing about where you're getting the kids from. You know, a bright, brilliant genius could be born anywhere, in any race. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the basic gray matter that people can work with.
Can I please respond?
Okay. Yeah, you can.
I'm not saying that Dr. Murray is wrong. I'm just saying you can increase the intelligence higher than 20%, and there are plenty of variables. I'm just saying, for example, the reason why blacks are doing so bad. I'm a black American. Out of the 60s, we've had a lot of social programs. They have led blacks into dependency because they've listened to people like Jesse Jackson. But if you take that black child when he's very young and let Bill Gates, for example.
Look, IQ is what you're built with that you can work with. It isn't a matter of what acquired knowledge that you have taken up in terms of your studies, sir. That's not what we're talking about. Thanks for your call. All right, next up. Who do we have next up? Patrick, WOR, New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
This is Patrick from Rockaway Beach. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I say that gray hair is hereditary. You get it from your children.
Well, I might agree with you there, having a teenager.
Oh, well, God bless you for having a teenager, but I really got to pray for you because anybody that's raising a teenager today need all the help in the world. God bless you, and I'll say a prayer for you.
Well, thank you for that, sir, but don't get the government in here. I don't want Hillary or a village to help me. Thank you. Steve, KSTE, Sacramento. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Go ahead.
I want to talk about your viewing our society as elitist.
I didn't say elitist. I said an elite society.
All right, elite society. With a society that has a homicide rate that's 10 times the average of what it is in Europe and other civilized societies in the world. I think that's one thing we should be concerned about. I'll take my comments off the air.
I don't have any idea about what's that got to do with anything. You know, we've talked about that there is a criminal problem in certain segments of our society, mostly in urban areas. And we think that that, as Murray does too, that that is a cultural problem. That is one of having your own set of morals and values. And that can only really be changed from within. No amount of government interference is going to change that, sir. Except, of course, people should have the right to defend themselves. Look, this, when we talk about an elitist society, of course it's an elitist society. We have absolutely no obligation to have these people come in here illegally. And then for those commentators or people that say, hey, I don't want to pay for that. I don't want to pay for these illegals. I don't want to give them reduced tuition. I don't want to have to pay for their social services. I don't want to have to pay for them when they go for emergency because it drives up the cost of my medical care. You know, first and foremost, we have a responsibility to our own family. And our own family, right? I mean, would you bring these bums in from out of the street, say, and displace your own kid out of their own room? And kick your kid out? No, you look after your own family first. You know, in Minneapolis, where that bridge went down, we now find out that there are some 70,000 bridges in this country that may have a similar problem. You hear again and again that we have an infrastructure decaying, rotting, has to be replaced. Billions, if not trillions of dollars are needed for this. So why are we frivolously paying for cheap labor to come in here to help somebody, to subsidize literally somebody in the middle class or in the upper class economically, to have their grass cut or have somebody come in and clean their place or subsidize your local restaurant who has a cheap dishwasher or a bus person? Notice how politically correct I was there, eh? Bus person. You know, you have to look after your own family first. And if people who say that that is, and somehow you're attacked for saying that, which is the obvious, like Savage has been, and called a racist and elitist, is nonsense. It's an attempt to shut you up. But somebody like Savage is never going to be shut up because he speaks the truth as he sees it, unvarnished. One of the few guys on talk radio today. You know, that isn't a toady for one political party or another political party. I mean, he says it the way it is. It is, the way he sees it. And people are upset about that. The people on the left particularly go out of their minds over this stuff. How dare he say that? He's got to be a racist. He's got to be shut up. You've got to have a fairness doctrine. All right, another call. Nate, Columbus, Ohio. What is it? WYTS. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Hey, I got a couple of comments in regards to the discussion that's been going on. The first comment is, you know, the fasting going on, wherever that was going on, to, you know, I know the story. But, you know, that's like me going up, you know, I want to be in the NFL. I'm just a regular worker. I want to go up, sit in the Cleveland Browns facility and say, you know, I'm going to fast for 4 days, you know, unless you give me a job.
Until you give me a job, until I can play, until I get a $1 million contract.
Yeah, and then they're going to, you know, they don't belong here, period. Come over here the right way. You know, I got a friend that, you know, he's just an acquaintance of a friend. He's from some other country in the Middle East, but he's getting Social Security, and he's not even retired, and I just think that's ridiculous. I'm afraid that my Social Security is not going to be available when I'm old, you know, and this is, you know, it's not being...
Well, it's not going to be available because it's a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it depends on the current... You know, particularly when you hear the Democrats yak about the Social Security lockbox. What an out-and-out lie. There is no Social Security lockbox. And, of course, when the boomers retire, all 78 million of them, there's going to be a tremendous strain on the system. And unless you're prepared, every worker of the day, when the boomers are retired, are prepared to give up 25% of their paycheck in order to pay for Social Security, which, of course, they're not going to do, it's going to go bust. Or there's going to have to be a tremendous cutback in terms of benefits.
Put 25% of every week of my pay into a 401k so I can just budget my own retirement. But the second part, my other comment, is in regards to elitist society. You know, that's what we're a capitalistic society. That's what elitist is. We're here to capitalize.
And absolutely. Good, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, we've got a call. We've got a line open now at 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. What's wrong with saying you're an elitist? I mean, Dr. Charles Murray, he says that the smartest young people are being shortchanged by an education system that puts a child's emotional well-being out of learning. He says, He said the other thing. We placate people, kids, because we're a society which says nobody can be stupid, even if they are. What else did he say here? Oh, of course, he believes. He says, I got news for you. He says, we're not all equal, and the sooner we accept that, the better. There's nothing wrong with being elitist, and we need to come to terms with that and embrace it. All right, 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. Peter Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you for joining us. And we're talking about elitism, what's wrong with elitism, and why we are so afraid of it. At least there's certainly a segment of our society that's constantly beating up on our society. Sure, we've got some warts in our history, but, you know, we have a lot more good on our side than bad things that we've done. And when we've done bad things as a society, we tend to correct them as we go along. Let's go to Brian in Cincinnati. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, okay. Now, what if China and other socialist countries around the world start coming in our debts? What if they start trading oil on the black market, you know, below market value? And what if they stop accepting American currency? What about that?
Well, I don't know how they would do that since we buy so much, have so much of our domestic requirements manufactured by the Chinese. You know, they've got another 400, 500 million people, maybe it's even 600 million, that they're trying to move out of the rural areas into the urban areas. You know, although there are a lot of people in China that are doing extremely well, there are still more people that are extremely poor than those that are well off or even middle class.
Yeah, but you have to admit that is dangerous, that is a possibility. They could do that to us.
Well, of course they could. I mean, it's bizarre, and I'm going to talk about that shortly. It's bizarre that we've put ourselves in this position and allowed ourselves to be put in this position where we are sending billions and billions of dollars so that the Chinese sit on $1 trillion and have to buy our treasury bills so that we can finance our debt, federal debt, without spiking our interest rates. I mean, that's another story, though. But, I mean, generally speaking, in terms of the model of our society, of course, look, individual freedom. You know, Thomas Jefferson, I've been reading a lot about Thomas Jefferson, and although he was an idealist, I mean, he believed really that the incursion of government really stifled individual initiative, and therefore the society could never be as great as it could be if government just stepped back and you had very minimal government. And he's right. I mean, that's what we're about. Individual sovereignty, individual rights, individual accomplishment. And through individualism, the collective is helped. And it is shown by, it is so far superior. Second place is so far behind. Now, are we making mistakes the way we're going today? Absolutely. But let me tell you, Canada is a very socialist country. And it's a good model to make a comparison to, because in 1970, it went extremely far to the left and socialized medicine. It has high benefits for not working. It taxes everything you make over about $48,000. You lose 52 cents to the government directly. That's directly. That doesn't include their value-added tax or their national sales tax of 7.5%, 8%. And then you have local, provincial, like state sales tax of about 7%, 7 to 9%, depending on where you are. I mean, it's a huge amount of money that is taken in by that government. But let me tell you something. They thought they could tax their way to prosperity. Well, I'll tell you what, a couple of years ago, a study was done. And on a per capita basis, who do you suppose spends more on their individual citizens, residents? Canada or the United States? It's the United States. And why is that possible? Although as a percent we don't spend as much, but in real terms and dollars we do, because of our freedoms less encumbered than the Canadian socialistic system. Our economy has grown so much faster, so much bigger on a per capita basis than the Canadian one, that now American governments, plural, spend more on a per capita basis on their residents than the Canadian government. And so that shows you the difference in the power of individualism, the power of freedom, the power of an individual to have an opportunity to be all they can be. Now, does that mean that a moron can become a Bill Gates or an idiot? No. Can they increase their IQ by 20 points? Yes. So an idiot can, you know, aspire to become an imbecile. An imbecile can aspire to become a moron, and so forth. But you got to wonder that with this stuff going on, with these idiots like Sandoval, the San Francisco supervisor, spending his time, and obviously other people, trying to censure Michael Savage. I mean, that is just, when you think about this, are the morons in control? Yes, I think they are. You know, most people don't want, people like Savage have better things to do than to get involved politically, and many, many of the brightest minds are in business. They won't get into politics. Because look at it. Maybe they don't want to be surrounded by morons and imbeciles and idiots. Maybe that's what it's about. So all right, check out michaelsavage.com because he has a response to Sandoval's attempt to censure him, the San Francisco supervisor. And quite frankly, I find nothing offensive about Savage, what Savage said. If these people want to fast, then let them. If they choose to die by starving themselves, they should be allowed to do that. It is a free country. They're sovereign individuals. And they should be allowed to do that if that's what they choose to do. To call Savage, to condemn him as what? Is it a racist? Got to be a racist. Yeah, of course. Yeah, intolerant and racist comments by Michael Savage is just so much rubbish. It's just twisting the reality. Twisting the reality of what this man says. All right, it's been my honor and privilege to sit in for Michael Savage. My name is Peter Weisbach, and this is The Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage. It is an honor and a privilege to be here, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. So I want to talk about this threat, not so veiled, by some ministers of the Chinese government that says, hey, wait a minute now, look, back off, back off, back off. Don't try to get us to float our currency, because if you push too hard, we may push back and we may start dumping some of those $1 trillion that we have because of this trade deficit. And what would happen? Well, of course, what would happen is it would spike interest rates. So, you know, when we have this trade deficit, you do understand that there's only one place that people, the Chinese, who have a surplus with us, where they can spend American dollars. And they can only spend American dollars where? Here. And so when they have that kind of a surplus, they're in a position to buy up American corporations, which they did. The IBM PC, personal computer division, was bought by Lenovo, the Chinese computer company. They've made other attempts. They were going to buy Unocal when it was up for sale. There was a big uproar about that. So you understand that when you've got American dollars, you can only spend them here. You can't spend them in China. You can't spend them in Japan. You can't spend them in Germany. You can only spend them here. And so what happens then? We start to lose businesses and the income stream from those businesses, which in the long term is a detriment to this country. So there was this big headline about China wanting to, saying basically that, look, I mean, if you guys don't back off, I mean, we could do this to you and it would be a huge problem. Now, Hillary Clinton has brought this up, but I think that her solution would be, she says we're too vulnerable, and we are, to outside influences, to the Chinese. Although I think that her solution would be to tax more to bring down the deficit. But anyway, so this was and so here's the reaction. Now, President George W. Bush said that China would be foolhardy to attempt to push down the dollar in retaliation for U.S. pressure over Beijing's alleged currency manipulation. If that's the position of the government, it would be foolhardy for them to do this. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said that China was considering, said that that China, the suggestions that China was considering selling off dollar-denominated assets to hammer the already weakened U.S. dollar would be absurd. We have tensions, and we have to deal with those tensions on both sides, but overall, both of our countries are committed to a constructive economic relationship. You know, I don't know what is so constructive about a relationship that has this huge trade deficit year in, year out. Do you? And what's so constructive about the Chinese then peg their currency, the yuan, to the American dollar? Which means if the American dollar goes down, the Chinese currency goes down in lockstep. Now, economic theory will tell you that when there is a devaluation of our currency, it would make our exports more attractive in China, right? And therefore, we should start exporting more, and eventually this trade deficit will even out. But it's never going to happen this way. Not the way the Chinese have set it up. The way the Chinese have set it up, it doesn't matter how low our dollar goes, their currency will go down in lockstep, and none of our exports will ever be cheaper over in China. And people like Bush and Steve Forbes, whom I like a lot, will make the argument that this would be foolhardy for the Chinese to pull out of the U.S. dollar and start to put their money into the euro, for instance, because it would hurt them too. If we went into recession, we wouldn't buy as much from them. But what they don't understand and somehow refuse to understand, yes, in the capitalistic mind, that would be stupid. They can't imagine that somebody would do that. But we're dealing with ideologues. A group of people that have power in China and that want to stay in power in China. They've already proved what they would do in 1989 in Tiananmen Square when they turned the tanks on their own people. All right, I want to read a bit from Paul Craig Roberts, who's an economist who has been warning about this problem of this huge trade deficit and the fact that we are exporting all of these manufacturing jobs, these value-added jobs, these blue-collar, middle-class jobs in manufacturing are going gone. And he's been warning about this. And it makes absolute sense. If we keep outsourcing, what's going to be left for people to do? Non-tradable, low-skill jobs is what's going to happen. Anyway, Paul Craig Roberts writes, he says, early this morning, China let the idiots in Washington and on Wall Street know that it has them by the short hairs. Two senior spokespersons for the Chinese government observed that China's considerable holdings of U.S. dollars and treasury bonds contributes a great deal to maintaining the position of the dollar as a reserve currency. Should the U.S. proceed with sanctions intended to cause the Chinese currency to appreciate, the Chinese central bank will be forced to sell dollars, which might lead to a mass depreciation of the dollar. If Western financial markets are sufficiently intelligent to comprehend the message, U.S. interest rates will rise regardless of any further action by China. At this point, China does not need to sell a single bond. In an instant, China has made it clear that U.S. interest rates depend on China and not the Federal Reserve. Now, isn't this an untenable situation to be in? For the largest economy in the world to have put itself in this position where a foreign country that is, well, it's not, they're not our best buddies, and they're certainly not strategic partners. I mean, think about the absurdity of this picture. We send billions and billions and billions of surplus dollars over there because we want their goods that used to be manufactured here, manufactured over there because they're so cheap. So we're sending them all kinds of money where they can build up their military, and in the Pentagon is spending billions of our tax dollars strategizing on how this country may become an enemy and that we may have to go to war with them in the future. I mean, isn't that a bizarre picture? And then you have all these rascals and scoundrels that we call politicians with this fuming hot air, particularly out of the U.S. Senate. I mean, talk about a bunch of windbags. They are just, they're obscene, quite frankly, the way they carry on. How could they have allowed this situation to develop where we have exported literally all of our manufacturing? As a matter of fact, China now does 50% of the world's manufacturing. That's right, you heard me. 50% of the world's manufacturing. I mean, just imagine for a moment a world without China and the goods that they produce here. And all of the empty shelves at your local Walmart, like a ghost town, not a thing on the shelves. Now, is this the preeminent power in the world, the so-called superpower, self-anointed, by the way, is this the position that we should be in? So where is all this going to end? The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects over the next 20 years, I think, that 6 out of the top 10 positions needed in this country are non-tradable, low-skill service jobs, which, of course, are being filled with this through this porous border down south, all of these illegals flooding in here and taking most of those jobs. So what's going to be left for Americans to do? Where is all this going to end? Are we just going to be one happy new world order family, everybody on the welfare, in the welfare trough, lapping up? I mean, I don't know. Is there going to be a world welfare trough that everybody's going to be slobbering out of? Well, how is this going to end? Because this is not healthy. This is not healthy to have a dictatorship control our economic future. Whether we're going to be able to have interest rates that can continue to generate this economy and keep this economy moving and make things affordable for us in terms of mortgages and consumer credit. Isn't it absurd? I mean, these people that allowed us to be put in this position, that's criminal negligence, isn't it? And who would one look to? Well, we should be looking to our leaders, both Democrats and Republicans, shouldn't we? And Bush, headline, Bush may try to cut corporate tax rates. Yeah, these companies that have been so good in terms of exporting these jobs overseas, they should get a tax break. All right, I'll open up the phone lines for your comments, and I do have some lines open, and I know this is heady stuff. But hey, this is really non-political. It's non-partisan. I mean, how could we put ourselves in this position? Allow ourselves to be put in this position? How could any leaders put us in this position and keep telling us that this is good for us? How could it be good for us to export good-paying jobs? How could it be good for us to close down factory after factory after factory after factory and end up with low-paying service jobs? 1-800-449-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-449-8255. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. By the way, it's 22 after the hour. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is always an honor and a privilege to do so. And I'm just making comment on the fact that the president says it's foolhardy for the Chinese to attempt to manipulate our interest rates, which, of course, they can. We are no longer a sovereign nation. We have succumbed to the trap of credit and debt. And the Chinese sit there with about $1 trillion American dollars, and they buy treasury bills and T-bills to support our federal debt, right? That's right. And if they stop doing that, what do you think is going to happen? Well, one of two things will happen. Let me put the scenario to you. They start moving out of treasury bills and, say, into euros. Then there's going to be demand and more competition for available dollars for savings, right? So the interest rates are going to go up to try to attract the dollars to service the federal debt. But what they'll probably end up doing is they'll probably end up printing more money, the Federal Reserve will, and then we'll have what? We'll have inflation. And it'll probably go back to double-digit inflation. Look, this is all pretty straight stuff. I wish other people would talk about it. But somehow, as long as I'm okay, Jack, you know, I'm making my millions, I don't have to talk about it. Because you got to wonder, what's going on here? So no longer are we in control of our own destiny. This is the United States of America. You know, the first thing that Thomas Jefferson did when he became president, he got rid of the debt. And I think the budget, now I may be off a bit here, I think the budget was, or the debt was about $21 million with an M, which was a lot of money, I guess, in those days. But he did pay it off, the federal debt, in the 8 years that he was president of this country. He abhorred that kind of debt, although his personal life financially was a shambles. But he hated it in terms of the federal government. And he paid it off. But here we are with this huge deficit. We owe trillions across, I mean trillions. We have unfunded liabilities in Social Security and Medicare of some $75 trillion. That's with a T. And these jackasses that are call themselves senators or congressmen, they don't talk about that. Or these people that are running for president, all they do is focus groups. They talk about nothing, absolute nothing. Except giving you more for nothing. You notice that? Giving you more for nothing. Which is an out-and-out lie. We are indenturing ourselves and our children. I guess this is the New World Order. Citizens of the United States, in hoc, beyond their ears, to the rest of the world. Indentured to pay it off. Don't manufacture anything anymore. Where the real value is, left with low-skilled service sector jobs. All right, Joey, WOR New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Typical low-skilled service sector jobs. What are these low-skilled service sector jobs? We are always looking in the service sector for management people, and most of it is from within. If people want to advance in the service sector and better themselves, there's always positions available. So, you know, factor what you call these great manufacturing jobs 30 years ago was called the dead-end factory job. And so, you know what? We're not doing that over here anymore.
Are we doing now, Joey?
The service industry right now.
What's the service industry?
Why is it a dead-end job for somebody working at McDonald's who works themselves up to a manager and gets them paid?
So how much do you think somebody at McDonald's makes?
How much do you think a manager of a McDonald's makes?
No, I'm asking you how much a hamburger flipper at McDonald's makes.
A hamburger, yesterday's hamburger flipper is today's...
No, I'm asking you a question. How much does a hamburger flipper make? Probably about $18,000 a year.
Right.
So, and an unskilled worker in the timber industry before it was devastated by the spotted owl debacle in Oregon and Washington and Northern California would make about $30,000, $35,000 a year. Now, that's a heck of a difference, isn't it?
The difference is that hamburger flipper today may be an assistant manager at $30,000.
Yeah, but not everybody can be assistant manager, Joey. And there are a lot of people that spent their whole lives in the sawmills or at GM or Ford or Chrysler making a good paying job, middle class, working class, but middle class, maybe lower middle class, being able to afford a mortgage, put their kids through college, and the wife didn't have to work. So don't tell me that service sector jobs, because you're just smoking something, buddy. It just doesn't exist. Look, service sector jobs don't pay as much as manufacturing jobs for the unskilled. Now, of course, we've managed to kind of offload all that stuff over to China so they can use their prison labor, and then, of course, send back toothpaste that's filled with poison, pet food that's filled with poison, toys now. Fisher-Price had to recall millions of toys because they think there may be too high of a lead content in the toys, so that little junior there is slobbering all over this lead paint with lead in it. Tires have just been recalled. Some tires are because they tend to separate and they weren't made properly. Remember the shrimp as well? The shrimp was giving people, I think, salmonella. Oh, this is just wonderful. I just love this globalization. Don't you like it? We've got no control over the quality of the food that's coming in here, the goods that are coming in here. Oh, no, not at all. Just offshore all that stuff. 1-800-449-8255 is my number to call. 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is 34 minutes after the hour. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you for joining us as we talk about being hollowed out. I guess it's really by corporate America, with the blessings of our politicians, both Republican and Democrat, despite the fact there's a lot of hot air about this stuff. Oh, it's not good for people, corporations, to kind of offshore and send a, you know, move their head offices to the Cayman Islands or wherever they send it to, so they don't have to pay corporate income tax on the worldwide income and stuff like that. Look, I mean, this has all been done with the Congress standing by, allowing all this stuff to happen, to the point now where the Chinese have $1 trillion of American dollars due to the trade deficit, and they say, hey, listen, don't pressure us, eh? Okay? Because you push us too far, we're going to continue to value our currency wherever we want it to. We're going to peg it to your dollars. It doesn't matter if your American dollar goes down 50%, 75%. Our currency will go down further and further in lockstep with your currency. And you're never going to wipe out this trade deficit that you have with us. And if you push us too much now with your threats of legislation, forget it. And tariffs, forget it. We'll just take your, we won't buy your T-bills anymore. We'll spike your interest rates. We'll put your economy on its knees. America has lost its independence. Lonnie, you're up next. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, appreciate it. I just wanted to give you, I'm not sorry.
It's Michael. Not Michael, it's Peter Weisbach.
Hey, Peter, sorry about that. I just wanted to say that I totally agree with you. America as a country, we just cannot get enough of debt. Not only on the government level, but on a personal level. The reason the companies, in my opinion, have to outsource their labor is because we as Americans, we feel like I need to make more and more and more money rather than just trying to make do and live off of what I make. So it puts pressure on the companies. Their biggest expense is labor. So if a company can go ahead and get labor cheaper and get the same product and the same profit margin, of course they're going to go ahead and outsource it. So we as a
I understand that. That is part of the problem. People say, you know, well, labor, American labor is really responsible for this. But the American Manufacturers Association says that 25% of their costs, fully one quarter, are due to regulations. 25%. And then you have the FICA, and then you have the FICA taxes, you have workers' compensation, you have all of these costs on employment insurance that are put upon our domestic manufacturers, all of which doesn't happen, they don't have to pay it, over in China. And so if the government is going to put that kind of, impose those kind of costs on American manufacturers, shouldn't they then say, now wait a minute, you cannot go and outsource that particular product. I mean, I think we should put tariffs on the stuff coming in. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. All right, who's up next? All right, Matt from San Diego. Good afternoon and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think you're in a little danger of seeming a bit hypocritical. And it's simply because at the beginning of the show, you practically ridiculed a guy for suggesting that we might possibly be being bested by China, and then you just spent a half an hour.
No, but we're not being bested by anybody. We're even being bested by our own people. But corporations are going to go where they're allowed to go, and if you give them too many regulations and they have an opportunity to make more money, make the product cheaper, have bigger margins, they're going to go to that place. It is up to the government to have set back and said, wait a minute, that ain't going to work. Either we're going to allow our American manufacturers to compete and get rid of Social Security and Medicare and workers' compensation and all that stuff and OSHA requirements, OSHA regulations for the safety of the workers, and forget about the EPA and environmental regulations so that our manufacturers can compete on an equal footing, or they're going to have to say, you know, you just can't do that. We're going to put tariffs on the stuff that you're bringing in. The stuff that you are manufacturing in China for domestic consumption over here, when it comes in, there's going to be a tariff.
Complicity in their plan to undo us. So it's 50-50, but we're falling into it because we don't have the gumption to stand up for ourselves.
We're not falling into it. Our companies went over there. They look at a 1.4 billion population as a potentially huge market. It is up to government to restrain the excesses of capitalism. Sir, thank you for your call. Next up, we have Jack from Tampa. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you this fine day?
Good, sir.
Me too, as a matter of fact. It's almost Friday. I've got a counter proposal for you. In fact, you touched on it about two callers ago. You know, the Chinese don't really have us over the barrel that they think they do because they have to have a market for their goods. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, that's part of it, yes.
Yeah. So if we, behind the scenes now, we don't do it publicly like the Chinese just did and threaten us, but we go behind the scenes and we threaten them that if they do the sanctions on us, basically by getting rid of their dollar reserves, I think they're about a trillion right now, we threaten a 300-400% tariff on every item that is sold back into the United States, whether it's sold by a U.S. corporation or not.
They have us, though, because our government wouldn't have the Giuliani's to do that because you'd have no product left here
to
mollify your own consumers.
Term. Like I said, you wouldn't have the product in the medium to short term, but the manufacturing left in this country would fill the void, and the manufacturing...
No, what? I mean, there wouldn't be a TV in the country.
Well, keep in mind now, I'm saying threaten, because I don't think the Chinese would call the bluff if it was done back channel.
But you see, that's because people think that they think rationally in economic terms, which is not the case with dictators. Dictators, first and foremost, are trying to maintain their position of power. And they do that many times by having an external enemy. Now, from the reading I've done, and it's my understanding that the Chinese leaders have for a number of years now, but since Tiananmen Square, have kind of built us up as a potential enemy. All the while they're doing our manufacturing, more and more of it all the time. So these people are prepared to do things that, in rational economic terms, we can't fathom that they would do. But they will probably do it because they want to stay in power.
You know, Peter, I would have agreed with you 10 years ago. But if you look at the Chinese economy now, even though their government is purely communistic, their market is turning into a free market to where what we used to call a peasant 10 years ago now wants his own consumer goods and has to have the money to pay for it. Therefore, the Chinese have to have the hard U.S. dollars coming in. Mm. To pay not only for their emerging free market, but also for their military. So if we threaten to cut that off, then they would have to at least consider the possibility of their own economy falling at the same time that the United States would.
One would think that rationally one would do that, but that by the same token, one would have thought that Saddam Hussein would have done the rational thing and said, hey, take a look everywhere you want. I don't have any weapons of mass destruction. And as it turned out, of course, he didn't do that, and he actually lost his position of power. All right, sir, thanks for your call. All right, next call. Patrick in San Diego. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for my call. I think just one thing that might be lost in the argument here is that many of these companies relocating offshore are not doing it out of avarice. They're doing it out of survival. And if I could just give you an example, I work for a San Diego company here in telecommunications, and basically, if your competition is doing this, whether they're based in the U.S. or not, we're all calling on the same customers. And if those customers care about price and bottom line, they're going to choose your competition over you. And with the regulations and how expensive it is to manufacture in the U.S., if you don't make that hard choice, you could lose your entire employee base. You might have to shut down completely instead of saving possibly 50 or 60% of your jobs in the sales, marketing, finance, and other divisions of your company.
I agree with you 100%. And that's why those decisions have to be made by the federal government. Because they can't be done individually by manufacturers or American corporations. Because they can't say, I'm going to sacrifice myself for the good of the country and to go out of business. because my competitor is going out there and having the stuff offshore. So outsourced. So I agree with you 100%. But, you know, that's the responsibility. I mean, other than just a bunch of hot air coming out of the U.S. Senate and a lot of posturing from both political parties, those things have to come out of the government, the executive branch and the legislative branch. Sir, thanks for your call. Next up, Adam in Atlanta. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the corporate tax rate. A couple breaks ago, you mentioned that you were disagreeing with President Bush offering a tax cut to corporations, and you disagreed with that. And I think that that's one of the best things that can ever happen.
Why? I mean,
and that's because corporations don't pay taxes.
What do you mean they don't pay taxes?
They don't pay taxes. The consumers pay the taxes.
Oh, I know. That's an argument, right? Okay. Thanks. Appreciate your call. Because ultimately, one can say that everything is paid for by the individual consumer. Yes, that's true. But I don't know why, and I don't know how, giving a tax break, not that I'm against higher taxes for American corporations, but giving them a tax break isn't going to return these jobs that they've outsourced overseas, particularly to China. All right, I'm going to go for a break, and you can join me at 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. Wise back in for Michael Savage. On the Savage Nation. Savage. Minutes before the top of the hour, Wise back in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation as we talk about being held hostage potentially by the Chinese because of our huge trade deficit. They got $1 trillion American dollars and they buy our treasury bills, and if they stop buying them, interest rates spike in this country, or the Fed starts printing lots of money and we face the same inflation that we had in the late 70s, you know, double digit inflation if not worse. And our economy tanks. Yes, not a pretty picture. And my question is, where does all this end? How could we put ourselves, how could our illustrious leaders, those that we elect year after year, election after election, allow this to happen? And they get fatter and fatter because they are living off the public largesse while this happens to the country. Josh, W-Y-T-S, Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I believe the American consumer has done this to us. We weren't always in this situation, and the Chinese can send anything over here they want, but if we refuse to buy it, then there won't be a trade deficit. This has happened at the cash register, and it's happened one purchase at a time.
Well, one can say that to a certain extent, but for the longest time, I tried to buy around China. As a kind of make a social statement, and it's impossible to do that. There just aren't alternatives available for most things now. They all come from China. I mean, look, China does half of the world's manufacturing now, 50%.
Well, we did half the world's manufacturing at one time, and like I said, this didn't happen overnight. It happens very slowly over a period of 50 or 60 years, and we've allowed it to happen.
So where do you think, there's no question about it, that the American population, but however, what are the alternatives? I mean, both political parties have been a party to this. But let me ask you this. Where do you see this ending eventually?
Oh, boy. I don't see it as anything good. I think it's going to be very bad. And I think the American consumer has to understand they cannot have high-paying manufacturing jobs and low-cost manufactured goods. They don't go together. We're going to either bite the bullet or we're just going to, I don't know. I think we're going to be in a financial collapse.
All right, sir. Thanks. I'm afraid, you know, there's a chance that that'll happen. Dean, KBJD, Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
This is where the North American Union comes in. We are so far in debt and in so much trouble with communist China that for economic and strategic reasons, we now have no choice but to merge with, or borrow, if you prefer, Mexico and Canada.
All right, now how would bringing Mexico on board help us in any way, shape, or form?
Landmass and people.
So we got the people coming here anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't understand landmass. What land? In what way would this help us?
We will borrow Mexico's manufacturing base, Canada's manufacturing base, and what we think.
Canada's facing the same thing we are. Mexico is losing jobs to China as well, so I don't see in any way, shape, or form how that's going to help us. Jerry, WIND, Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
All right, thanks for taking my call. This problem is going to get worse and worse. If we don't take action now, more and more of our federal budget is going to be spent on paying the interest off these bonds to China and to other nations. We're going to lose more and more manufacturing jobs. Wages are going to go down and down.
So how do you stop it?
Well, one thing you mentioned before, I believe tariffs are a way. You could do tax incentives for a company's patriotic to stay in the U.S. You could pressure countries like China and other countries to have higher wage standards. I mean, these are all actions.
So is there any candidate from either political party or independent that is saying we have to do something about this?
Well, the closest I would say who's really opposed to the current global rules would be somebody like Dennis Kucinich. Other than that, I think I heard Duncan Hunter earlier on an earlier radio show talking about the problem with China with our current trade rules.
All right, I think Hunter has talked about it. Kucinich doesn't have a chance, and unfortunately, Duncan Hunter doesn't have a chance either. Jay, KSTE, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Weisbach, I want to say thanks for having the guts to bring up a topic that seems to be like a dirty little secret our government, you know, doesn't want to admit. You have to question to the last guy who, as a Republican, or who's a candidate that's talking about this. Only other person besides you I've ever heard bring this topic up is actually Ron Paul. The significance, of course, of the globalization and the dependence on China to consume the treasuries, our dependence on their low-cost manufactured goods to maintain our American lifestyle that we're accustomed to, you know, you're drawing that line between the two that, and along with the labor from Mexico, that really not that people seem to be scared to bring this up, and you know, it goes over a lot of people's head, but it's worthwhile to bring this out in the open.
Now, I got to say something right here that Ron Paul, although I don't agree with all of his positions, is a very principled individual. I mean, this guy will actually read the Constitution and will go cast his vote in Congress based on his interpretation of whether this piece of legislation is constitutional or not constitutional. In other words, he actually refers to Article 1, Section 8, which delineates and outlines point by point the powers of the federal government, which, of course, it has far, far succeeded. But he actually says, no, I won't go along with this because that's constitutional, not constitutional, and it is not within the parameters of the federal government. I mean, look, this thing that we're facing in terms of offshoring has its genesis in our states. You know, our states have been bribed into compliance by the federal government. This is how the federal government's reach has so far exceeded the power that is enumerated in Article 1, Section 8. And that's because they offer federal tax dollars to states, say, on highways. And, of course, the state politician thinks, well, yeah, if I can get some tax dollars without being held responsible from actually raising the tax dollars, in other words, the feds do it for me, I'll take it. And after a couple of 3 years, the feds say, now, if you want to continue to get this money for highways, then you're going to do this, that, and the other thing, and this is the speed limit, this is how you're going to build them, and this is the you know, you have to take into consideration the environmental impact and blah, 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 and on and on it goes. And so these state politicians have given up their own sovereignty because they have been bribed by federal tax dollars. And that's how this system works. And again, how has it happened that we have outsourced all of these blue-collar jobs that were manufacturing jobs that were really providing a middle class, albeit a lower middle class, income for these people? It's because the politicians sat by. They were lobbied again and again by these corporations that were looking for a way to reduce their costs. So on the one hand, you have these rascals and scoundrels out there in Washington, D.C., passing regulation after regulation after regulation, putting layers of cost upon American manufacturers, more layers of cost, more layers of cost, more layers of cost, and then saying, well, okay, if you're going to outsource, okay, do it. There won't be any cost. Think about that. I mean, think about the hypocrisy of all of this. All right, that's all the time that I have this hour. Thank you so much for joining me. Peter Weisbach, it's been an honor and a privilege to sit in for Michael Savage on his Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you for being here, and my thanks to Michael Savage to get this opportunity to fill in for him. It's always an honor and a privilege because, as I've said it 100 times in the 5 years I've been filling in on and off for him, is that this is the guy that gives you the straight goods. This is the show that really talks about issues that are germane to the American society, really mean something other than this kind of the Republican toadies that are represent many of the other talk show hosts. Does that make me a great American, folks? Huh? Having said that, maybe. By the way, I got to tell you, I broke into my vacation. I'm repairing my own deck, and I've taken these 3 hours with pleasure. And as soon as I finish, I'm going to be back on the deck. And I like repairing the deck. It's the hard part is getting the old nails out. You know, I find that tedious. I hate that. I probably should have hired an illegal to do it for 5 cents an hour or whatever, or a penny a nail or something like that. But after all, I'm a great American, okay? So I don't do those kind of things. I do it myself. Made in America. I want to talk to you a bit about branding and why you are, how do you know that you're a Republican, or how do you know that you're a Democrat? And what brought that to mind was this story that said, U.S. kids taste a difference if it says McDonald's. This is according to a study. And the food tastes better to Americans 3 to 5 year olds if it carries the Golden Arches logo of the McDonald's fast food chain. This is according to a study out by U.S. researchers. Researchers from Stanford University Medical School and Lucile Packard Children's Hospital in California gave a group of 63 children two samples of chicken nuggets, hamburgers, french fries, baby carrots, and milk. Now, one sample was presented in packaging bearing the familiar McDonald's logo, while the other, which contained exactly the same food as the first, was in generic wrapping. Not only that, but the chicken nuggets, hamburgers, and fries were all from McDonald's. The carrots and milk samples of the identical foods, the carrots and the milk were from a local supermarket. The children were asked to taste both samples of the identical foods and then to pronounce on which one was better or if the two tasted the same. In the case of the nuggets, fries, carrots, and milk, significantly more children said the McDonald's branded product was tastier, despite the fact that foods were identical. The branding effect is very strong, even by only 3 to 5 years of age. Dr. Thomas Robinson, director of the Center for Healthy Weight at the Lucile Packard Children's Hospital and lead researcher of the project, said in a statement, they actually believe that the chicken nugget they think is from McDonald's tastes better than an identical, unbranded nugget, he said. Robinson pointed to savvy marketing by McDonald's as the reason behind the kids' preferences. Nobody else spends as much to advertise their fast food products to children. Anyway, this is interesting. So carrots, if they have the Golden Arches logo, taste better to kids than the generic ones coming out of the supermarket that are unbranded. So this brought to mind how important branding is in our society. After all, most of our entertainment, for most families in this country, the vast majority of it comes through sponsored products like this show, like television, and even politics. Because, it's all about branding, isn't it? If some of the things that were done by the Republican Congress were done by a Democratic Congress, Republicans would have been up in arms, including the Republicans that are in Congress. But because they were done by their own brand, everything was hunky-dory. Nothing was said. And vice versa. Because after all, this insane animus towards George W. Bush by the left in this country is insanity itself. Because I've said it again and again. George W. Bush has done more for the liberal cause in this country than Bill Clinton did in 8 years in power. Just take a look at the spending, and whether it's education, social welfare. So I'm going to ask you this. How do you know that you are a Republican? How do you know that you are a Democrat? Or an independent, for that matter, but primarily Republican or Democrat. How do you do it? How do you know? I want you to tell me why you know you're a Democrat. Or I want you to tell me why you know I am, hey, a Republican. Because it seems to me that this is a battle of branding, and it has to do with political parties. That it's more important that I belong to this political party, that I am a Republican, or I am a Democrat. And because of that, it's okay if we do X. Although, if it was done by the other party, then X would be no good. Oh, no. Couldn't do that. Bad, bad other party. That all of politics in America has turned to branding. There is no substance to it. There's no underlying philosophy left to it. Oh, they talk about it, but how often do they actually walk the talk? You know, for the most part, I love the Republican talk. I wish they would walk it, but I haven't seen them walk it in 10 years, 15 years. And certainly not when they had both the Congress and the executive branch of government for that 6 years. Not at all. So, my number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK. T-A-L-K. So, because really, basically, look, these kids here, and I don't think that you, most of you out there, as Republicans or Democrats, are really any different than these 3 to 5 year olds. The carrots come with the McDonald's arches. They taste yummy. If they come just unbranded, they're not that good. If chicken McNuggets, the same nuggets, come with the McDonald's arches, they're delicious. They're better than these other chicken McNuggets, which come in plain wrappers. Now, I got to tell you, having observed politics, that I think that that's the same case with most Republicans and Democrats. All they know is I'm branded as a Democrat, and whatever the other party does, even if they're doing what should be logically in within my political philosophy, be amenable to it, something we would seek as a political party, that's no good if the other side does it. All right, 1-800-449-8255. Let's kick off with Sharon, listening to us on KDON in Las Vegas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Well, I can't claim a political party anymore because of my dissension to both parties, so I tend to think I'm a moderate.
Now, why are you dissenting from both parties? What is it that they're doing or not doing?
They're not keeping their word.
What word?
Their word on helping the Americans.
Helping Americans to do what?
To live the American dream.
Is it up to government to ensure that you can live the American dream, or is it up to you?
Well, that's a good... Thank you very much. You corrected me properly. Bankrupting us to other countries, bankrupting us with the war, and, you know, like these debates right now, it's like, I don't want to hear a debate a year and a half before I vote.
Well, thank God that the amount of people that are watching them are going down. They're so tedious. There's too many of them. They're too canned, and I kind of agree with Newt Gingrich, who says it should be a real debate. They should be able to engage themselves instead of all of these rules and these idiot reporters asking them these idiot questions. I'd like to see them really engage themselves face-to-face. Let them ask each other the questions. Let the battle begin, the battle of words, the war of words to begin facing each other. Who needs these reporters asking these stupid questions? 1-800-449-8255. Wouldn't it be nice, though? Just think about that for a moment. If they're going at each other, and hopefully they kind of lose their talking points and forget for a moment that they're on national television and really go at each other. The war of words. 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 Words that wound. I want them to use them. 1-800-449-8255. Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Twenty-one after the hour, Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation as we're talking about branding and have you been branded? Yes, branded in the sense that you don't even know why you're a Republican anymore. You're just a Republican, and therefore you look at everything in terms of what the Republicans do as being good and what the Democrats are doing bad. And the Democrats exactly the same way. If you're branded as a Democrat, that's just the way it is. Whatever your party does is good. Whatever the other party does is bad. 1-800-449-8255. Bill, WSB in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Peter. Just called in to agree with you. You're 100% right on the money. What used to be a Republican 20 years ago is no longer a Republican. In fact, it doesn't exist anymore. It seems like both parties have become Democrats.
So tell me, are you an independent?
I honestly don't. I guess I'm probably, at this point in my life, leaning more towards being a libertarian.
Well, of course, libertarians will never gain power, right?
That's the truth. Unfortunately, that's the truth. Because, unfortunately, they haven't developed their branding.
Well, that's true, but the other thing, too, is, I mean, despite the fact that we talk about individual freedoms, and very clearly this country was founded on a principle of individualism and individual freedom and minimal government, and it was represented in our Constitution, which, by the way, has been bastardized over the years, but nevertheless, because the federal government's reach is well beyond its constitutional limits. But nevertheless, you know, it takes a great deal of courage to accept freedom, because with freedom comes uncertainty and self-responsibility. And the thing is that people tend to naturally seek security, right?
Absolutely.
That's the problem. All right, sir, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, Bob, WOR New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. I'm a Republican, but the difference between the two is, as a Republican, I've always been self-reliant. It's up to me to take care of my family and to earn a living. It seems to me Democrats have always been associated with unions and dependency on a larger group of some type of organization.
Okay, so that's your personal value system. Now, how does your party, the Republican Party, represent those values that you've just outlined to me? Because to me, it doesn't represent the Republican Party.
No, and you're right. You're absolutely right. The lines have been blurred over the past or so. And, you know, I think it has to do with sound bites, and, you know, that's really all the people pay attention to, and politicians know it. So, you know, we live by sound bite, and we live by feel-good democracy. You know, and actually, we're a republic before a democracy. People forget that, but this is a republic that we live in here, and we're a democratic republic.
But yet you're going to vote Republican, right?
I'm going to vote Republican.
You're going to vote Republican. Why?
Because they still represent closer to my values than the Democrats do. They represent my thoughts and views on things regarding life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, not the guarantee of happiness, but the ability to pursue happiness.
But you know that with these tax cuts, that they're not sustainable. They're not sustainable because, correspondingly, the Republicans never restrained and cut back their spending. And so ultimately, we're going to have tax increases, even if it's a Republican that gets to power, because we can't sustain these deficits. We can't grow ourselves out of these problems.
No, I know what you're saying, but there does need to be a change. I mean, it's a little. I live in New Jersey, actually, and we have a couple of toll roads that were supposed to be temporary toll roads, the Garden State Parkway, for example, and the perfect example of what you're talking about. That was supposed to be a toll road only to pay for the initial construction of the road, and now it's a toll road to pay for the livelihoods of the people that work the tolls. So. You're right. I know. You're absolutely right. It's very hard to stop that.
Sir, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Next, Sean, KSTE, Sacramento, California. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello.
Yes.
I think that, yes, definitely the political parties are brands, but they're outdated brands.
What do you mean outdated?
I think that the basic identity of the Democrats and basic identity of the Republicans were formed back in the times of FDR and the New Deal, and that's where their basic policy stances are and where they've been, and that's just not up to date with Americans.
Okay, so where are the Americans now?
Well, I think the Americans now find themselves supporting some Democratic principles, some Republican principles, but...
For instance?
Really...
Give me examples.
Such as lower taxes, like smaller government. Those are good Republican ideals, and I think.
And what about Democratic ideals?
I'm not sure.
I think that clearly the country is moving towards some form of universal health care. I mean, poll after poll shows that the majority of Americans want something done about health care. Now, I'm not an advocate of universal health care, primarily because I lived for many, many years in Canada. I understand the weaknesses of the system. It's a great system as long as you don't get sick. And if you do get sick, you got to hope that you're somebody who has some strings to pull, like a politician or a media figure, because then you jump ahead of the line to get your ailment treated, because they don't want bad PR for the nationalized healthcare system. And so, but very clearly, the American people are for that, yet the Democrats are talking about it, the Republicans aren't. Right? So are they behind times? I mean, I think what the problem with the political parties is, political parties are supposed to have a political philosophy. I don't think either party has a political philosophy anymore, and all that they're doing is trying to see where the American people are at and repackaging themselves like some consumer good to be more appealing. I think that's the problem, the root problem. Wise back, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's 34 minutes past the hour. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and thank you for joining us as we talk about branding. And is it conceivable, just for a moment, that you've been so branded that you don't even know why you're a Republican or why you're a Democrat? 1-800-449-8255 is the number to call. Chris, let me get this again. Hello, Chris. Listening to us on WSB, Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
You're absolutely correct with the branding thing. I mean, I voted for Bush just because I felt it was the lesser of two evils. But I think the problem with both parties is they both talk this great game. And what you said about them being packaged and whatnot, that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, one of them, they see which way people are going and like, oh, well, let's change our story and go that way. And then people will go for it. And they talk all this stuff, you know, build the fences, oh, let's do this, let's get this done, but no one's doing anything. And it's aggravating the hell out of most Americans because they want to. I mean, they had contractors willing to send bricks and other stuff to build the fence, but the government's like, no, 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 don't worry about it. We have it under control. And it's like everybody's pandering for votes to the point where they just don't care anymore.
So then why is it impossible for a third party to come along and actually do something? And I base this on the premise of, you know, Fox News saw that there was a bias, a left-leaning bias in the news media, and they exploited that by positioning themselves as being fair and balanced and picked up a considerable audience to the point that they're whooping CNN and MSNBC and sometimes even networks in terms of the coverage, say, of a political event. But having said that, so why is it that we cannot, if there is a void in the marketplace to the degree that you suggest, why isn't there a third party?
Well, it's like the two big boys on the block, and I don't know, like the libertarians, I'm not exactly, you know, up to date with what they stand for, but everybody knows what the Republicans stand for, supposedly. Everybody knows what the Democrats stand for, supposedly. The Democrats are actually doing what they say they're doing, which is
for the most part, obstruction and calling for investigations and this, that, and the other thing. And I guess the Iraq thing has fallen apart on them, but the Republicans say they're going to do this and that, and nothing happens. So I don't think it leaves any room for another group to come up, because everybody's so focused on watching these two duke it out and see who's going to come out on.
So the branding has been successful by both political parties, because they branded it. We've been branded to the degree that we don't live. For most of us, we can't see life outside of the two established political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. So basically, the branding has worked marvelously well. You know, somebody asks, what's a libertarian about? Well, a libertarian is, think of Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, and you're thinking about a libertarian, mostly, in terms of his philosophy, which is very, very limited government. And, of course, that's true until he actually got to the presidency, in which case then he was prepared to do things and seek some power that he never would have condoned as a private citizen. So he was human after all. And he did have some weaknesses, but he exercised power as in the presidency that he would have condemned if anybody else would have exercised that power, and he was a private citizen. So, see, after all, he was human, had his own foibles and his own weaknesses, his own inconsistencies, like most of us. Next up, we have Kathy, WDRC in Hartford, Connecticut. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I was going to say, I think we need to vote on the issues, you know, and not the party. About 2 years ago, and I don't remember where I saw this, but I saw a chart, and it, you know, listed different people. And you had what you had said about George Bush at the beginning of the program actually made me think of this again. It was like it had George Bush, Bill Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton, Dick Cheney. All these people were on this chart, and they belong to the Council of Foreign Relations. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're all in the same camp. It doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican. No wonder we're not getting anywhere, because these guys are, like, ultimately together. And it was like my eyes were open. And now it's like, if I, you know, had to vote right now, I would look at either Ron Paul or Sam Brownback, and you look at what they're actually saying and not what party they are.
All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, Dan, KNEW, San Francisco, Savage's hometown. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good to hear you again. Hey, you know, it is a policy. The parties, there's no difference. Let's face it. In the back rooms, they're making deals. The bottom line is this. It's a policy of divide and conquer. They very neatly have 50% of the people fighting against the other 50% of the people, rather than everybody. It's divide and conquer, rather than the people.
Yeah, but for what purpose? Why would anybody go out there and go through the machinations of getting elected, which is pretty difficult? And I think that people start off and they're idealists. They want to do something. I mean, it can't be very satisfying to constantly to basically not meet your objectives ever.
It's the whole government machine, though. Here's the thing. Rather than they have the Democrats thinking all these bad Republicans and oh my God, and the Republicans are thinking all these Democrats. And the bottom line is we're all getting screwed. The fact is,
it's true.
Government is the one that is the enemy. Like you were talking on this earlier with the trade thing, the fact that the states are coerced and bribed. The fact is, the whole concept of federalism is much, to a large extent, has been tossed out the window. It's not followed anymore. The states have been relegated to administrative districts of the federal government. And the problem is, the genesis of that is that the money comes from the people and the states. We shouldn't give them to them and give it to the federal government in the first place. And that's why the Constitution was very clear in the taxing clauses. And people misunderstand the 16th Amendment. It doesn't mean that they can tax everybody's wages. It absolutely doesn't. The Supreme Court has ruled many times that wages are not income. And if we didn't give them the money in the first place, they couldn't turn around and bribe the states with it.
Well, that may be true, but the situation, as you know, that every order and every law by the government is backed up by the government's gun, and therefore one can sit there and argue that the income tax is not legal, et cetera, et cetera. The fact of the matter is it's considered to be legal, and they have enforcement, and they do indeed go out there and enforce it. And all the people that are running around saying it's illegal, 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 don't pay income tax, these authors and these people that hold these seminars. You know, a lot of them are doing hard time. Ed, WOR New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Peter, I think there's a bigger picture here that is not being looked at.
Mm.
We're constantly talking about Republicans and Democrats at the national level, and I'm Republican because I support a lot of local offices as well. Mm-hmm. And I find at the local level that there are still a lot of conservative, moral people filling those offices that help us locally in the government. And I think it's once they cross the beltway, that's where the disconnect
But why? Goes. Why does that happen?
Pete, I think if I had an answer for that, we'd be able to change more of those seats out and get more conservative people in there that would pull for the majority of this country.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. You know, I got to tell you, I am a strong advocate of tax reform because one of the reasons you have lobbying is because you have people and companies and organizations and average citizens getting together in organizations, corporations, unions, lobbying to protect their self-interest. Why? Because we've given our politicians the power to tax certain groups, to give tax breaks to other groups. And all of that would be eliminated. You know, most of our lobbying would just disappear almost overnight if we had, say, a national sales tax and an abolition of the income tax. If there's just a national sales tax, I don't know, 7%, 10%, something like that. That is my preference. Because also then it keeps the government, you dismantle the IRS. In a free society, no organization should have the power that the IRS has. And if you got rid of that at a consumption tax, it is the fairest of all taxes. Now, some people say you can't do that. Then I think you're a flat tax that Steve Forbes has been pushing for a long, long time would be preferable. A flat tax, no exemptions. I prefer, of course, the national sales tax and get rid of the income tax because you take away the ability of these politicians, these rascals and scoundrels, to use these taxes to reward friends and punish enemies. Now, that's in stark terms, and that's not literally I'm talking about. I'm talking figuratively. But that's really what happens. If you did that, all these lobbying problems would disappear. At least 90% of them would disappear. Next up, we're talking about branding, how you've been branded as a Republican and a Democrat. How do you know that you're a Republican, or how do you know that you're a Democrat? Robbie, KZDT, Little Rock, Arkansas, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. We need to do away with the conservative brand because both the Democrats and Republicans are wanting to conserve systems that are broken, such as Social Security, the public education system, Medicare, Medicaid, the tax system, the welfare system, abortion. They're wanting to conserve all these things. We need independent people who say, you know what, we're open-minded enough to know that people are smart enough to educate themselves, to medicate themselves, and to save for their own retirement.
But you know that that's not going to happen. I mean, you take a look at, the senior citizens, of which there's going to be like 78 million senior citizens as the boomers retire over the next 10 to 15 years or 5 to 15 years. It's just not going to happen. I mean, at the ballot box, they're going to defeat and punish any politician who says that you're going to tinker with Social Security.
Well, we've contracted. And then other than that, there's no more. End it right now. And so other than that, nobody else is obligated. So,
I agree with you. Thank you very much. I mean, there's such a it just drives me around the bend when you hear these politicians, particularly on the left of the spectrum, say somehow people cannot be trusted to look after their own money. In other words, if you took half of the FICA contribution, which is what, about 14% for the Social Security component, 7% by the employee, and 7% by the employer, maybe a little less than that, 6-point-something%. But you take half of that, allow people to put it into, you know, 401k types of plans. They know you can't trust them to do that. And look at the stock market. Well, you take a look at the stock market over 30 years. It's had an annual return of about 10%. You can't beat that. You certainly aren't getting that kind of return on the money you're putting into Social Security, I can tell you that much. We have time for a break. And I'll be back for more of your calls. And this is the question, and I really want somebody to answer that. I mean, how do you know that you're a Republican? How do you know that you're a Democrat? Because you could very well have just been branded. It's just like these kids, these 3 to 5 year olds, that somehow the chicken McNuggets, that's it, chicken McNuggets, when they're in the packaging, the McDonald's packaging with the golden arches, taste better to these kids than the very same chicken McNuggets in plain wrappers. 1-800-449-8255. Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Before the top of the hour, this is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We're talking about branding, and how do you know that you're a Republican, or how do you know that you're a Democrat? Maybe you've just been branded. I mean, most people seem to act that way. Even some of the big talk show hosts in the country act that way. If it's done by the Republicans, it's great, and you're a great American. If it's done by the Democrats, it's exactly the same thing. You're a bad American. You're un-American. It's a bad thing. In Waco, Texas, Topo, welcome to the Savage Nation.
And number one, a capitalist. Number two, a Republican. And I was one of the Americans that the team that went to Russia in 1985 that had the meetings as, in behalf of Reagan and trade with Russia. The Russians told me the difference between me as a Republican and the Democrats in America, which was the same thing as capitalism and communism, was that Republicans believed that money has power, where Democrats believe that power has money. And I believe his analogy is perfectly correct, because I just look at the fact that I am never going to be a senator from New York because I don't have any Democratic friends that's going to pay me several million dollars, loan me several million dollars for a house in New York.
I understand that, but in terms of policy achievements and legislation passed and where the governments have spent money, I mean, surely you can't be proud of the 6 years of controlled by Republicans in Congress and a Republican in the White House. I mean, they have increased spending, domestic spending, at a greater clip than Lyndon Baines Johnson with the advent of the Great Society.
You are absolutely correct, and I just wish there was a replacement for the candidates that are currently running for the Republicans.
You think any one of those candidates are going to be any different when they get into the White House, if they should get there?
You need somebody totally independent, like a Ross Perot, that comes from the grassroots, that's actually supported by the machine of a Republican Party. And person does not exist today.
Now, you live in Texas. I haven't heard a thing from Ross Perot in months. Is he still? Yeah, is he still publicly making statements, or do you hear anything down in Texas about him?
He's really retired now. But we look at realistic things, like our companies are leaving here not to go to Mexico, but just like Halliburton's leaving Houston to go over to the Arab Gulf. It's just not a scenario for all the small businesses. Everybody's leaving.
And sure. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs. Tom WOOD, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I love your topic. I am a conservative Republican. I voted for Bush. Number one reason was because of his stance on Social Security. I wanted that opportunity, or for the government to give me that opportunity to save my money where I could fit. And he pushed and went state to state, tried to get 4%, maybe hoping for 2%. And I think the Republicans that call themselves conservatives are not conservatives, wouldn't grab hold of that.
I got to tell you, I mean, I think that George W. Bush is a liberal.
Well, you know, you may think he's a liberal, but...
No, I'll tell you why I think he's a liberal, because I think liberals have a high propensity to be liked by other people, and this guy has shown no backbone at all in terms of cutting back spending. He's, for the conservatives, he cut taxes, and for the liberals, he increased spending. He wants to be all things to all people. I mean, I don't see a lot of leadership here.
You're right. He didn't campaign on that, though. He was a uniter, a compassionate conservative. He campaigned on giving to the... pharmaceuticals, 30% to the elderly. The only thing he campaigned on that was conservative was Social Security. But that's number one reason why I voted for him. But we're going to get exactly opposite with the Democrats. But what I think is these senators have...
Now, how do you think we're going to get opposite? I mean, this guy, the Republicans were in control when we increased our entitlement through the prescription benefit program, the biggest increase in entitlement since Medicare itself.
Well, my point is that the senators that have all this power push these bills through. Bush made a mistake by passing these bills, and they overspent, and now then we paid the price, and now we but he did not campaign on being a conservative Republican. He didn't campaign.
He said he was a compassionate conservative.
Well, when the true conservative, I listen to Laura Ingraham all the time. When she comes up, or you guys come up with a person that's going to win, maybe we'll win. But it's just we don't have it, and Bush didn't campaign on it. And I really
all right. So thank you very much. I mean, this isn't really what he campaigned on. I'm just talking about how can one be a Republican if you're a conservative? How is that possible today? I mean, there's nothing that this that the Republicans as a whole in Congress and George W. Bush as the head of the Republican Party, for 6 years they had a majority in Congress, they had both branches of government, and what did they do with it? They squandered it. It was obscene what happened. The corruption, the increased spending on social programs. I mean, come on. How can anybody, after having gone through this, say, hey, I'm a Republican, unless you've been branded? You've been branded, and you just don't know why, but you're just a Republican, and everything that's being done in the name of the Republican Party is good, and everything done in the name of the Democratic Party is bad. All right, very quickly, Mark, Austin, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. I like the way you compared the chicken nuggets with branding. I don't think the typical person that's an active voter actually knows the platform. Just much like a mainstream person who's involved in a.
All right, sir, you make the point. They've been sidetracked by the branding all the time that we have. Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage. It's been my honor and privilege to do so. This is the Savage Nation.